Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, it's time to be grateful. Besides being grateful for working with me. So this week we're doing all the early preparation, planning for Thanksgiving, helping with Thanksgiving tips, or you are. And
because I know everybody's thinking about it, so we ought to be talking about it.
And next week they're all going to panic, and they all need to go buy wine, and they need to, like, stock the, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
The liquor cabinet,
the
get ready.
The fun part of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, you have to balance on these things.
Right.
Turkey and booze.
Exactly. Right on.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that next time.
You need to.
That'll be fun.
Cook the turkey correctly so that.
You can then relax and.
You don't. Yeah, you have a balanced meal.
Right. There you go.
Exactly.
Well, I love Thanksgiving, like we all probably do. And it is it's a holiday that's important to our culture, and it's a great family time in our country. So I think it's, you know, we get the best of all worlds. We get to be together and we get to be around the table while we're together. And we are thankful at that time and remember all the things that are really important to us.
Like cranberry sauce?
And turkey and stuffing and gravy. And I did use the word gravy.
Gravy.
But what it really is a stock reduction.
All right,
thickened
so you're
going to
get the Thanksgiving 20 questions in this edition of Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. And then in the third segment, you're going to get grilled again because we'll have
go
a chef challenge.
Do it.
So let's start with the turkey drama.
Mm-hmm.
All the ridiculous things that people ask, like, how do you choose a turkey? How do you know it was frozen? How do you know it was not frozen? How do you know about its origin? Is it a heritage breed turkey? What in the world is a heritage breed turkey? I think those are some of the questions we'll start with.
Okay.
You have 30 seconds. No, go ahead.
It's a quiz show. I think, you know, what you want to do is make sure you're getting a fresh bird. Obviously, that's going to be the best tasting bird. It is poultry, and they produce a tremendous amount of them, obviously, at this time of the year. So it is very hard to... you know, deal with something that's volatile like that and not freeze it. So, but this time of the year is your opportunity to get fresh turkeys. So I would just go to a market where you trust them and tell them, say, hey, I want a fresh turkey. Where are they? And when it comes down to it, I have, you know, heritage breed turkeys are a thing of the recent, you know, last 10, 15 years that this is something that came back. It's like heirloom tomatoes or heirloom seeds.
Well,
there's
thing.
An
it's
interest
a thing of 100 years
in
ago.
Things that are old, right, and things that were pure. And that's what's so beautiful about having something that is a pure breed is that it can be often quite excellent. And something that maybe was crossbred to look a certain way or appear a certain way, for example, like a tomato, that it would be round and red and not all gnarly and weird like what a German striper might look like as it's coming to be ripe. So with a turkey, one of the things you also want to be concerned about is whether it's fresh, but also has it absorbed water, which just adds weight to the bird. So, you know, again, it helps to have something coming from a reliable source. And a heritage breed just, you know, means more than anything that it's probably going to be expensive, quite frankly, because turkey is quite inexpensive, which is very nice for all of us. But there are reasons for that, which is that it is going to be an excellent bird. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with, you know, just a regular turkey. I'll just put it that way. They can be very, very good. And it's really on the cook to take care of the bird and roast it correctly and make sure that it's nice and moist and that it's, you know, that it's not overcooked. Once your turkey is just cooked all the way through, you have to remember the biggest thing about cooking one is that it is often a very large bird. They can weigh 15, 20 pounds, depending on your family and what your needs are. And, or maybe you do two birds that are smaller, but that there's carryover cook time in such a large piece of meat. So it could continue to cook up in temperature for at least 15 minutes after it comes out of the oven, maybe even longer. And depending on how you handle it, let's say you put a whole bunch of foil all over it, well, that's going to retain the heat. So it's going to cook up even more. So, and there's nothing wrong with doing that, but just keep it, just bear it in mind. I mean, honestly, wrapping it in foil when it comes out of the oven is a great way to serve a hot turkey. You know, while you do all the other millions of things you have to do, and God help you if you're in that kitchen by yourself. I mean, I think that's another thing that's great about Thanksgiving. Everybody comes together. Everybody helps, and everybody should help.
Everybody does not do the dishes, though.
Oh, well, that needs to change. Everybody needs to do dishes. And you know, that's the thing, you know. I mean, it's a lot of work. I mean, I think sometimes we dread Thanksgiving because of the amount of work that it takes for the people that are cooking.
Well, I think people end up doing menus that often are a bit more ambitious than necessary. I read a couple of things in just preparing, mm-hmm. thinking about today. One, mm-hmm. I looked up Thanksgiving 1916 menus.
Okay, that's cool.
And almost every menu, there was turkey, and almost every menu had giblet gravy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yum, yum, yum.
Right. So mm-hmm. not some kind of exotic gravy. And every menu had some kind of stuffing. And depending upon where it was in the country, the stuffing was a bit different. It might be
oyster
stuffing. It might be white bread stuffing. It might be sweet potato stuffing.
Or cornbread in the South.
I was pretty intrigued by the sweet potato stuffing, mostly because sweet potatoes are cooked with honey and bourbon.
Okay.
In 1916. That sounded pretty good to me.
Mm-hmm.
And there was very few side dishes. It was one or two seasonal things that were really nice, and they were big. I mean, they were obviously, big, robust platter of whatever it was.
Sure.
If it was Brussels sprouts, it was just all those sprouts and cooked with bacon and bacon fat, and that's it.
That's because they didn't have all these things available to them, because back then you had what was around you, pretty much, unless you were in a major
port. I think that was my favorite menu, was the turkey with the sprouts and the sweet potato stuffing.
It would be my favorite.
And that and everything else was on the table, was on that menu, were like pickles and olives and celery and just little snacky things. I mean, that's the...
And that's nice because that's cold. I'm sorry, I'm a chef. I'm a professional chef, and even I get daunted by cooking at home, you know, which is truly one of my goals with my current kitchen that I just built, because I wanted to have all the work areas that I needed, but I still don't have all the ovens that I wish I had. I have two ovens in my house. I wish I had two more, you know, or even another stove.
Well, how do you time 11 things to come
out
correctly?
That's the thing. It's just so hard to produce a big meal. And I'm with you on what you just said. I mean, maybe the smartest thing is to just concentrate on what your family's really favorite things are and just make those beautifully. And that's, you know, you don't, you know, annihilate yourself trying to produce all these different dishes. And that combination of cold and hot is really going to save you, you know. And if you can make, honestly, I encourage people, if you like cranberries, to make your own cranberry relish. It's not hard to do. It's actually quite simple to do. And if you make it yourself and you put all the things in that you really love, or your family, you know, depending on what culture you're from, you're going to make it in different ways. But, I mean, if you make that one cold dish really, really, really good, then it becomes a very important part of your meal. And honestly, to me, cranberry relish in a way becomes the sauce for the turkey. It helps to balance out the richness. Okay, I'll say one thing that I think will help people. And I don't know, this may be shocking, but I would roast my turkey the day ahead and break it down. Okay, so I've talked about this before, but I confit the legs. So I cut the legs off of the bird and I confit them. Now that has to be done the day before. Because it takes so many hours in the oven. And also, why not? Because it's going to be perfect the next day.
Well,
it's going to be ready to go.
Well, white meat bird, you know, the breast and the legs are going to have a different cook time anyway.
Exactly.
So I do think you always deal with the two separately, and I think that's smart.
Well, most people don't. So, and I understand that.
Even day of, if you were not dealing with the legs and you were just roasting
the breast on the bone. Yeah, but
it's a whole lot easier and a whole lot easier to get that to be moist.
I agree, but what I was getting at is that if you do actually do both processes, which is confit the legs the day before and actually roast the breast on the bone the day before, then you can undercook it. You need to leave room because obviously you have to heat it back up the next day. And the nice thing about that is when you do take the breast off the bone, after you've roasted it on the bone, you throw it on the grill. And that way you have a whole new cooking area you can work with, which is great. And honestly, our weather, I mean, I know our weather is unusual and who knows what's going to happen the next 2 weeks. But, I mean, if it's as nice as it is right now, I would definitely be out there using my grill. Honestly, I would grill in the snow. So, but it is gorgeous outside.
Pilgrims cook turkeys outside.
Well, exactly.
I was honestly thinking about using I was wondering about should we, I don't know, there's Thanksgiving in Argentina, but, you know, there's a restaurant that has a perfectly good wood-burning grill.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I not put turkeys on the spit above
Oh, yeah.
the wood fire? I mean, maybe we'll get back to the, Thanksgiving.
And just getting back to doing the thing the day ahead is that if you do then take the breast off the bone after you've roasted it, then you brown your turkey bones, you go ahead and make your stock, you go ahead and make your sauce, and you are in such better shape. The next day, and you can make your cranberry relish 2 or 3 days ahead easily. It just gets better, and there's nothing volatile about that as long as it's in the refrigerator.
So day of you heating things up.
Yeah, you're either wrapping the breasts in foil with a little bit of butter, a little bit of herbs, maybe, you know, fresh thyme or rosemary. Again, whatever you like, and salt and pepper, reseason it, put a little butter in with it, wrap it in foil, pop it in the oven, or put it on the grill. Or smoke it on a grill, which would be really fun and really add great flavor, like as you were saying, you know, going to a wood-burning grill. But then you've made your sauce is ready. All you have to do is heat it and serve it. And then now you make your potato puree, because you should not make that ahead of time. Potato puree needs to be made fresh. It becomes very weirdly stale tasting if you make it the day before. So if you are having mashed potatoes, then
once you activate the potato starch.
Yeah, so you can make those that day, and then whatever beautiful vegetable you want. And if I serve collard greens, okay, one more step that it's made a day or two ahead, and all you have to do is heat it up. And then maybe you have a beautiful fresh green vegetable, maybe you like green beans or écrevisse, or maybe you want to do the sweet potatoes, which is not a vegetable, but, you know, just do a couple of good fresh things that day. Oh, my gosh, it'll be so much easier for you. You'll have so many less dishes, because we all know if you have, you know, 12, 15, 20, 30 people at Thanksgiving, just the amount of china and glass and silverware from your table is huge. So if you can reduce the amount of cutting boards and casserole dishes and pots
washing,
and pans,
yeah.
That'll make your day so much better.
Let's take a step back to heritage turkey. So in some of the things that I had read, there's an interesting piece from, actually it's from Ontario, about Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving meal 100 years ago. And they were talking about, and this is the middle of, 100 years ago, it was the middle of the First Great War, the First World War, and the Battle of the Somme was going on, and we were not there yet. It was still the French and the British and the Germans fighting out on the Somme, and a lot of spices didn't come to the States. A lot of trade was suspended through Europe, and our large trading partners were European.
You mean during that war?
During that war.
Oh, gosh.
And so
that's hard.
One of the things that they said was that some of the seasoning of different things were affected.
I guess.
So like pumpkin pie was being done with maple syrup.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not such a bad thing.
Which sounds pretty good. Yeah, it's a pretty good adaptation,
that
right?
Sometimes good things happen from bad things.
And not some of the other spices. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. And also that even then, because there were not all kinds of manipulations going on, I think, with a lot of the animals, they would look for wild turkeys to capture and fatten up the last couple of weeks of that time of the year. And if they only captured so many, there'd only be so many turkeys available. So they would, of course, cook other things.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the thing. You would sign up in advance with a farmer or somebody that did that, which is kind of a cool thing.
It's cool.
Like the flavor on a wild turkey that just got fattened up, that sounds pretty good.
I have to tell you that I have had a wild turkey banging his head, beak, I guess it is, on my back door for like the last five months.
Thanksgiving
is
coming.
I'm like, what is wrong with you, turkey? Do you know whose house you're at?
Why don't you call my brother and ask him to come shoot it?
Fattening up turkeys. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Why don't you pen him up?
I'm not going to do that.
Just pen him up.
No, but he's really beautiful. And I'm surprised.
I'm sure he'll eat a lot of corn.
It is interesting.
I'll come over and cut his head off.
He's super. Oh, Tony. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Stop.
You can pluck him.
He is super lean. I really am surprised. Exactly. When you said fatten up, yeah. I'm like, man, that turkey that keeps coming to my back door is really skinny. I'm like,
he must be paying attention to his Fitbit, that turkey, right? That Fitbit's telling him, get up, walk around, keep moving.
He's always
10,000 steps
always
a day.
By himself.
Yeah, and so he's a lean turkey.
Yeah.
We got to pen him up, fatten him up. But the sourcing,
it's huge. Honestly, that's why we're doing this show now.
My roundabout route, which is the only route that I ever have on things sometimes, was that the funny thing is, in the modern world, you can go to the internet and you can find a local source where you can sign up for a heritage breed turkey.
Well, you can get
fresh.
Oh, they're local, great local turkeys all over the place. Go get one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, when we come back on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll stop talking about turkey execution and start talking about
actually cooking it,
and some of the dishes that go with. All of that and more on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
All right, so let's get into the nitty-gritty of some Thanksgiving preparations.
Okay, I'm excited.
Why don't you go through some of the steps
and
a few recipes on some of the basics.
All right, cranberry relish. So when you buy your bags of fresh cranberries, which is how you make it, it's kind of fun, and actually it's also visually very beautiful. Fill up your sink with some water. And cold water, and empty the cranberries into the sink, and they will pretty much float. There's sometimes little stems
is
on there.
Is that the visually beautiful part?
Oh my God, they're so beautifully red. I always take a picture of it. I mean, every year. But anyway, so just kind of run your hands through there. Oh, Tony, gosh, we need a visual for this radio show.
Yeah, that's no question. We don't need a visual.
I didn't say run your hands through your hair, Tony. I said through the cranberries. All right. So
work with what you got, said he.
And then pull them out, drain them, and just, you know, you're looking for cranberries that might not be nice looking, and just remove those and remove any stems. Should only take a couple minutes, drain them, and then on the stove, in as we always say, a heavy bottom stainless steel pot, bring up to a boil. Let's say you're doing two bags, two bags are probably enough, actually, for a family of, say, 10. So let's say a bottle of port. And we use the Fonseca bin something. What is it, Tony? Do you know?
Bin 27.
Okay, that one. So just to be perfectly specific, that is exactly the port that I use.
Do you
have any idea how much that costs wholesale? It's not very expensive, is it?
It's a ruby port. What you want is a ruby port, which is not tannic. It's nice and fruity.
Yeah. Okay, so I bring that up to a boil with the juice of 4 oranges. So you want to juice them, strain them. I would put about 3 cups of sugar in to start, and then I put 2 cinnamon sticks in and 2 pieces of star anise. And I let that simmer, actually come up to a boil and then simmer for probably 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And then the cranberries don't take very long at all to cook. You need the spices to do their job in that liquid. Actually, I also put, half a bottle of red wine. So it's half a bottle of red wine, 1 bottle of port.
Use this little Cote de Rome. It's a Cote de Rome.
Yeah, okay, that one. And once all the spices have done their job, then you strain it because obviously you don't want the star anise and the cinnamon stick in with your cranberries. And then you bring it back up to a boil after you've strained it, and you put the cranberries in, and it takes all of about 5 minutes. Now, you can either choose, once the cranberries are soft and pretty, to strain them out and reduce that a little bit, or you can let it go. I prefer to strain them out and reduce it by about 30%. That liquid. And then I check it for sugar. You may have to add actually several more cups of sugar, quite frankly, because cranberries are quite tart. Put those cranberries back in and let it sit for about 5 minutes, and then you're done. It's so good. So that's how I make cranberry relish. And that's one of the things that you can do ahead of time and just have it in the refrigerator ready to go.
All right. Do you have it in you to talk about mashed potatoes?
Yes, I do.
Not pomme purée.
Well, all right.
Not potatoes as sauce.
A la Joël Robuchon.
And elegy. Yeah, let's. No, okay. No. But
regular way. Yeah.
The merkin.
I would just like to say the biggest thing about making mashed potatoes instead of potato puree.
Yeah.
Is when you boil your potatoes, the water has to have salt in it, and do not overcook your potatoes. Meaning that the longer they're in there, they're starch, the more water they're going to absorb. Do you want your potato puree to taste like water? No. You want it to taste like potatoes and cream and butter. Or you can use half and half, or you can use milk. So that's entirely up to you, how rich you want them to be. And I use Yukon Golds specifically, or fingerling potatoes. Fingerling potatoes are kind of a pain because they're small and you have to peel them. And that's, if you have a lot of people, that could be very time consuming for you. But fingerling potatoes make a beautiful potato, mashed potato. And so you cook your potatoes in highly salted water, then you drain them very well.
How salted is highly salted water?
Okay, yeah. Salty enough that the water tastes like salt, but not as salty as you would make it for a green vegetable, which means it needs to taste like the sea. So not that salty. When you taste it, it tastes good. You don't want it to be so salty when you taste it. You're like, oh boy, that's, you know, so, okay, maybe not highly salted. I take that back. Lightly salted water. And once they're drained, lay them on a sheet pan or cookie sheet or whatever you have and put them into a 300-degree oven just to dry them out for maybe, you know, so they, you know, need to be evenly spaced out on that sheet pan, maybe for 3 minutes, 4 minutes. They're going to steam out a little bit of their moisture in that dry heat in your oven.
And so potatoes in lightly salted water, then the sauna.
Right. And then take them out. And then we can do two ways. You can either pass them through a food mill, which is what I do, or you can do what my mom does, which is put them in your mixer. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It works. Both work. So maybe not everybody has a food mill, or maybe not everybody has a mixer. So it could be one way or the other is better for you. If you're doing it in the mixer, you need to have your dairy hot. I will encourage you to use cold, solid butter. So unsalted butter, a nice fresh butter, you know, butter that's, you know, hasn't been in your refrigerator. When I say fresh, I mean hasn't been in your refrigerator for the last 4 months. And when I say that is because I don't want it to have absorbed odors in your refrigerator.
Well, potatoes are so neutral, you can communicate them to your potatoes.
Exactly.
Those aromas.
So if you cut your, let's say, quarter pound pieces of butter into little squares, and, okay, so you have your potatoes in your mixer, you have your hot, I'm going to say cream, on the stove, you use your whisk attachment on your mixer and beat up the potatoes, and then on low speed, slowly drizzle in the cream into your potatoes, salt and pepper, and then begin to add the butter. You do not want to overwork them, which will change the texture of the potato.
Oh, they get so tired.
And don't make them too thin. That's what you're looking for. That's why Tony's saying potato, you know, mashed potatoes rather than the potato puree that I make. You know, the potato puree that I make for the restaurant has almost a pound of butter per pound of potatoes. It's pretty over the top.
If you're doing 25% by volume butter and cream, you're going to get what people probably think of
as mashed potatoes. Yeah.
Well, and it'll seem pretty rich and nice. And
I do prefer more butter than cream in the end.
Yeah.
You know, less butter in than I do cream.
The trick is reduce that cream
the other way around
a little bit before you put it into it when you're heating it up. And
yeah, I put more butter than cream in, excuse me. And salt and pepper. And I mean, you know, back in the day when you would read a recipe, even Julia Child used to say use white pepper. I am personally not fond at all of the flavor of white pepper, so I don't care if there are little specks in my potato puree. I use freshly ground black pepper, and it tastes great. So I would suggest salt and pepper as seasoning. So that's mashed potatoes.
I'll admit, it's funny. If you can get fresh chives that still have good juice in them, man, that's just a great thing.
Yeah, there's many things you could add to, but if you want a basic recipe for potato puree. And again, just decide if you want to use milk, half and half, or cream. It's up to you.
All right, let's talk about sweet potatoes.
Oh.
People have strong feelings about sweet potatoes. Some love them to death, like the sweeter and more ridiculous that they are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some are offended by them being sweet and ridiculous. What camp do you fall into?
I was reading through some of the old cookbooks that I have that are from the 1800s and looking to see if there would be any full Thanksgiving menus mentioned in them. One of the things I came across was a recipe for pumpkin, and a way that I actually cook spaghetti squash, and never ever thought about doing pumpkin this way, because typically we would either boil pumpkin or roast it, but not necessarily in the shell. And it was a very old recipe and very old-fashioned way of serving it, which is that you would quarter the pumpkin, put it on a sheet pan, put a little bit of water in the sheet pan, leave the shell on it, take the seeds out, but leave the shell on it and steam it, roast it in the oven, you know, say 300 degrees. And then they actually I love this. And I know this is very rustic and not fancy in any way, but I love the fact that they would then just literally take those pumpkins from the oven, put them on platters, and people would spoon the pumpkin out. I love the idea of that. It feels very natural.
Are you preparing for politics?
Because actually, I have been thinking about it lately.
In this political season, you went directly from my question about sweet potato
to
and
pumpkin?
Pivoted to pumpkin. You dealt with none of the issues,
oh,
but
boy.
You did it really smoothly. So, ladies and gentlemen, Chef Cindy Wolf might be preparing for a run. You never know.
Yeah.
So could you, I'm sorry, but I'm going to do what people struggle with doing as a moderator. Could you answer the question asked?
That's
Please
funny.
Give us your feelings on sweet
potatoes.
Well,
obviously,
potatoes.
I had pumpkin on my brain.
The electorate deserves to know about sweet potatoes.
That's totally awesome. That's awesome. Okay, so sweet potatoes.
Savory.
Peel them.
Savory or sweet preparation.
All right.
Which camp are you
Peel
on?
Them. cut them into large dice. What?
Which camp? A sweet preparation or a savory preparation?
Oh, savory. I don't like sweet.
Okay,
sweet
there we go. Now we know.
Right. Leave me alone.
Now we know.
Okay, so into water with salt. Put the big pieces of sweet potato in there. And guess what? When you take them out, you're going to rice them just like you did the other potatoes. I'm making sweet potato puree. I'm not fond of big pieces of sweet potato. It's just not my bag, baby. So I'm then going to do pretty much the same treatment I would do to potato puree. I'm going to add cream. I'm going to add butter. I'm definitely adding a little bit of cinnamon. I'm going to add a pinch of cayenne, a pinch of nutmeg, salt, black pepper, and I might take it to the sweet point of saying that I would add Gosling's Black Seal rum because it is one of my truly favorite
flavor profiles. Well, rum is made from sugar, but it doesn't add any sugar.
It seems sweet on the palate.
So savory, yeah.
And if you did want to make it sweet, just throw in brown sugar, and you've got something seriously good. And even you could make a pie with that if you added sugar to it. So if you wanted to do a large dice prep, I would do virtually the same thing, but you're just going to do really small amounts of anything. You know, you don't want them swimming in butter. I wouldn't add any cream, but I would just toss the potatoes out of the pan with, again, a little ground cinnamon, again, the cayenne, salt and pepper, and a little bit of butter, and serve them that way. Or you could cook them slowly in cream and do a gratin, which would be gorgeous, actually, and easy. Again, you can make that the day ahead. You know, the potatoes are cooked in the salted water, and you could add to that water to cook, we're talking about sweet potatoes, the cinnamon to the pan, into the water when you're cooking them, boiling them, which obviously imparts flavor into the potato and does it really beautifully, actually. And then just put it in a gratin dish with a little cream and butter and seasoning, and there you go.
I'm going to kick in a little quick South American because these guys are pretty good at sweet potatoes.
I'm sure.
So what they'll do is, in pretty salted water, cook the sweet potatoes.
How heavily salted is that water, Tony?
I would say for, if it's a 6-quart pot, full with probably 4.5 quarts of water.
Yes.
You're looking at 2 tablespoons.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So, relatively salty water. Cook the sweet potatoes in their jackets, cool them overnight. Next day, peel it, and very heavy bottom pan, like a cast iron pan.
Mm-hmm.
In could be beef fat. Could be duck fat, could be butter.
Okay.
But traditionally in beef fat, you know.
That's awesome. I like that. Yeah.
Crush the sweet potato.
Of course it's beef fat. It's Argentina.
Okay. Crush the sweet potato. More salt on both sides. Mm-hmm. Cracked pepper on both sides. But you literally, you have that one it's already seasoned and cool. You crush it in there. You're browning it a little bit on both sides. On the side that you want to finish up.
Mm-hmm.
Before you throw it in the oven for a minute or two, brush it with a little bit of honey.
Okay.
That is crazy good.
I like the beef fat.
That is crazy good.
That sounds good.
So the basic side dishes we talked about. We talked about collards for a second.
Actually, I think we should talk about collards a little bit more. Yeah,
just
again.
Making collards, because that's a very healthful thing. And it is a very healthful thing to eat collard greens.
It is. I really think the best way to make them, and there are many ways to make them, is with a smoked ham hock broth. So I'll just say for the restaurant, I do 24 smoked ham hocks, which is a large amount, obviously, and make 5 gallons of stock that way. And then I add a little bit of chicken stock to it and actually a good bit of Tabasco and a little bit of salt and pepper.
At home, you're going to get a pretty good flavor out of one smoked ham hock. But if you want to buy 2 dozen, you can.
Right. So that's the recipe, just smoked ham hocks, Tabasco, salt, pepper. Once the stock is made, you want to be careful with your salt level because you're obviously going to draw a lot of salt from the ham hocks. And
No onions?
No, I don't. No, that's it. That's all.
Wow.
That's all I put in there.
And then how long for the collards?
Once the stock is strained, I cook the collard greens usually about 45 minutes. Sometimes an hour. It depends on how big they are, how mature they are.
But until they're tender and not falling apart, right?
Yeah, you don't want them literally falling apart. That's too far. You do want them to be very tender. And you want the broth to have obtained the flavor of the collards, and that's part of that process. Also, when I get the collard greens in, I mean, they can have all kinds of bugs on them and, you know, stuff growing on them. So you really want to wash them very, very well in a lot of cold water. And I do pull the ribs out. Once you've gone through them, you're sure they're in good shape, they're nice and fresh, the rib's gone, then I stack them and I basically julienne them in a wide ribbon. And I think that's just nicer to eat that way. So I don't cook the leaves whole.
Yeah, cook more evenly that way, especially without the ribs.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to eat the ribs, especially if they're mature.
So 2 minutes on turkey. If someone is trying to roast a whole turkey, they're doing it kind of the old-fashioned way. It's the day of, and they want to roast the whole turkey.
Mm-hmm. I put cold pieces of butter between the meat and the skin. You know, you have to get your hand up in there. Basically, you can slide your hand in
between the skin
and the breast meat. Yes, and not the legs, but the breast meat. And you can also, with that butter, what I would do, a little trick, is to put a tiny bit of salt on that butter while you're kind of popping it in there, and maybe even pepper too, just because it beautifully seasons the breast while it's roasting. There are all sorts of, I do it very simply. I do it breast side up. I've seen, you know, plenty of people talk about doing it breast side down or elevated or whatever. I mean, honestly, I've never had a problem with a turkey roasting it on its back with the breast up. You want to do it in an oven where you are going to have a long cook time. It is going to get golden brown, and that is your goal. You want the skin to be crispy. You want it to look golden brown on the outside. You want the bird to be moist. I encourage you to not take it up. I'm almost scared to say this. Just please don't overcook. I'm not going to say a temperature. Just please don't overcook it.
Well, if you take it, if you pull it out of your oven at 170, it will keep cooking past done. That's the problem.
That is the problem. If you exactly.
The world is afraid to pull it early.
Right.
You know, and they're not taking into account if you have, let's say, a 15-pound bird.
Right.
You have significant carryover cooking,
which we talked
about. It's going to keep cooking for most of it, most of the next 30, 40 minutes.
If it's a big bird, it really is. So please consider that. That's what's going to dry out your bird.
Chances are, dry turkey is not good. If you pull it at 160 and it's wrapped in foil, it's going to gently finish cooking through the carryover.
And it'll be warm. It'll stay hot. Yeah. You won't have to reheat it and make it cook even more.
I don't think I'd pull it before then, but if you pull it at 170, you will have annihilated. Before you serve it, you will have annihilated the breast.
And also with your stuffing, I'm just going to leave it, it's up to you. We have always stuffed our, you want to make sure the inside of the cavity is clean, that you've washed the bird, that there's nothing in there. Don't cook it with the giblets in the back of the neck, which is where they usually put them. So do be careful about that. There are two cavities. There's the neck cavity and the interior of the breast cavity of the bird or the rib cage cavity. So, and my mother always put stuffing in the neck area too, which honestly, oh boy, was that like the best part of it? Absolutely. But with stuffing, in my family, we do a very simple stuffing. My mother would always get, some sort of white bread the day before and would cube it. Actually, she'd use her, what's that kind of knife called? Boy, does that bring back memories. An electric knife. Oh my gosh, I can see my dad doing it now. But anyway, she would cut the bread into cubes the day before. She'd put it in her. She always put the bread in the roasting pan, and just let it dry out a little bit. And then she would actually saute her onion and celery with butter and salt and pepper. And then the next day she'd put it all together, and then she'd stuff the bird. And she also always did a second casserole dish of stuffing because obviously we all love it, and it just doesn't taste quite as good as when it comes out of the bird.
Nope. All right, when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, it's a few more minutes on Thanksgiving, and then we'll get into the Chef's Challenge. All of that and more on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
A few more Thanksgiving questions for you.
Okay.
See if you can avoid pivoting away from the topic. So, what are your feelings on bread Thanksgiving?
No bread. You've got stuffing. You don't need
bread. What about those Parker House rolls?
Like, oh, well.
Right, those kinds of, see?
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. Okay.
Right.
Well, and also my sister.
God, that was a setup.
Okay, my sister makes those, what are those, crescent rolls? I mean, like, my family, it's like annihilation on the basket of the crescent rolls. And, you know, that's the way they're, you know, that's cool.
Carbohydration. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a stuffing lover, so I'll stick with that. But, yeah, I get the Parker House rolls.
Just
the,
stuffing, mashed potatoes,
and crescent
potatoes
rolls and all that stuff.
Crescent rolls.
And green vegetables. I like peas.
So not cornbread.
And cauliflower. No. I mean, honestly, my family's from, you know, Pennsylvania, so I didn't grow up on that, although, and I can have cornbread every day at work, so.
Yeah, that's, see, I'm a big believer in cornbread at Thanksgiving. I like it a lot.
I get it.
Especially like in a big skillet kind of situation.
It is fun. You know, that's the nice thing about cooking for one group of people instead of all night long for different people is that you can make one big old pan of cornbread in a nice, great cast iron with some good fat in there. You know, maybe it's pork fat that you cook it in, or maybe it's just corn oil, but.
Maybe you took the liver from
nice
the turkey
and
you
browned
it off.
Mm-hmm.
And a little duck fat with a little bit of onion just to season the pan, got it out of there, and then put your cornbread batter in there.
And the sauce. And we didn't actually get into that too far.
The sauce. You're talking about the gravy?
Yes. I have to admit that I get a little bit horrified, and as much as I love my mother and the way that she makes her gravy freaks me out.
Yeah, Mother Wolf, stop listening.
Yeah. She often would leave most of the fat that was in the bottom of the pan from the roasting and add flour to it and add water. And then that would, I'm like, no. So if you do roast your bird the day ahead, if you know, you can do the, that's the beauty of it, is you then cut the breast off. You've already cut the legs off because if you've confit them. And now you can brown the carcass, cut it, just pull it into pieces, or if you have a cleaver, break it up a little bit. But put it in a roasting pan in the oven, say 395 degrees, and get it nice and brown, and then pull it. Drain it. You do not want any fat there. And put those bones in a stock pot or a big pot with cold water, a little bit of carrot, celery, and onion. You don't want to put too many carrots in there because it is a white stock and it's, or a lighter stock, and it's, you don't want to blow it out with the flavor of the carrots. So, you know, maybe you put one carrot in and half a head of celery and one onion in a large dice, and maybe one bay leaf and four black peppercorns and maybe barely a pinch of dried thyme, and bring it up to a boil, turn it down to the lowest simmer, and let it cook for 2.5 hours. And then you can strain that, reduce it down so you get good flavor. So maybe you reduce that stock down by 25 to 50% until you're happy with the way that it tastes, and then mount it with a roux, which means you bring it back up to a boil. You have now gently melted butter, and it's one part butter to one part flour. And just add a few tablespoons, if you will, of that. You have to make the roux cold if your stock is hot. Whisk that cold roux into that hot stock, cook it out 30 minutes, and you should have a beautifully thickened, really, really pretty sauce. You do want to pass it through a sieve when it's finished.
So dessert? Is there going to be dessert at this Thanksgiving?
You know, I'm not big on dessert.
Really?
So
no,
how about,
no
how
pecan
about you?
Pie, no pumpkin pie, no sweet potato
it'll,
pie?
It'll be there, but it's not coming from me. So what are your thoughts on dessert, Tony?
People love pecan pie. They aggressively love pecan pie. I think it's because it's kind of a sugar pie with nuts on it for the most part. And people love their pumpkin pie. I'm a sucker for sweet potato pie.
Okay.
That's,
right.
That's a big thing for me. And the crust is a big deal on these things. It's funny. A lot of people struggle making pastry crusts, it seems like. And I think that's pretty easy to come up with a graham cracker crust that you're going to like.
Oh, I like that idea.
I love graham cracker crust. That's really, you're not going to have problems with things rising or kneading or like.
And that's easy.
You literally.
It's easy.
Graham cracker crust is, if you're not a good baker, I recommend that strongly.
Mm-hmm.
And pumpkin pie filling is not that difficult with a little bit of work to get worthwhile pumpkin pie filling. I'll tell you right now, you'll probably like it better if you make it with butternut squash.
I know. See, that's what my mom does.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, she uses yellow crookneck squash. But, I mean, we've talked about this before. I never knew. I always thought when she said pumpkin pie, my sister and I were horrified when we found out that she made it with squash. And not, but that's the way she grew up,
I mean,
making it.
Yeah, I mean,
honestly, in the end, it's really delicious. So who cares?
Yeah. I mean, but, the other stuff, how you decide to season it, I think people sometimes go overboard with all the seasoning mm-hmm, on that. I think mm-hmm. That's the thing to be careful. And I think that the thing that's, I like pie and ice cream. I don't know why there isn't pie and ice cream at Thanksgiving.
Most people do whipped,
I would be most grateful.
Yeah.
They do whipped cream for, but I like pie and ice cream. You know, that's...
Why not?
Exactly. There's, I know
You could make like a sour cream ice cream or a creme fraiche ice cream for pumpkin pie. That might be tasty, especially if you use a graham cracker crust. That might be fun.
You could. I would rather have something a little boozy, honestly. But that's, you know, some kind of...
There are lots of choices.
Some kind of rum raisin or something like that for pumpkin pie. I think I would like a lot. But you know what? We're down to a chef's challenge.
Okay.
So I think that you're going to be in deep trouble.
So what's your list of ingredients?
I'm going to make you deal with something that you never deal with.
Oh boy.
Ever.
What's that?
Ever. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Leftovers.
Oh.
That's
ooh,
right.
Fun.
Leftovers.
Okay, I like that. I'm up to the task.
That is your situation.
Oh, good. Well, I'll tell you right now. I have dealt with leftovers at Thanksgiving, and one year I made a pomegranate mayonnaise, and I mean, now every year my family asks me to make it again for the turkey, because my sister just, my brother-in-law's from Iran, and so they have a lot of really cool...
You're talking about for turkey sandwiches?
Yeah, they have a really cool pantry with stuff that not everybody would have, and I have to say, so I made pomegranate mayonnaise.
But you're not at your sister's.
Oh, where am I?
You're at your house.
Oh, okay.
And this is all you have.
Oh,
this is it.
Oh, all right. Okay. So leftover turkey leg, is it confit or roasted?
How are you prepared the leg?
Oh, well, it'll be confit. Walnut, Swiss chard, garlic, Spanish onion. What does that say? Oh, durum wheat, eggs, turkey carcass. Lovely.
Yeah.
Cranberries not cooked, rye, whiskey.
See, you bought
oranges,
a lot of stuff that you never quite got to cooking.
Okay.
Because people do this.
Rye, whiskey, oranges, port wine, day-old bread, salami, yum, acorn squash, dairy, and dried herbs only. Well, that's mean, Tony. All right.
That happens.
That wouldn't be happening at my house. Turkey leg. So it's confit, so it's already off the bone, and it's nice and clean and ready to go. I am making a salad because that's going to be just so good. So the Swiss chard. I guess it's a warm salad since it's only Swiss chard that I have.
I'm like, I guess what
I'm
kind of salad are you making? Acorn squash salad?
Well, it's sort of a warm salad. So I'm going to wash the chard. I'm going to julienne it. I'm going to finely chop the garlic. Yeah. Put a little bit of olive oil in the pan. No. I'm going to put corn oil in the pan. I'm going to get the corn oil just warm. I'm going to barely toss that garlic around in there. I'm going to hit it with the chard. I'm going to pop the walnuts in there, which will be cracked and already roasted. And then I'll put the turkey leg in there. And in a separate pan, I'm going to julienne Spanish onions and put those in a super hot pan and get them really caramelized. And I'm going to put those on top. And that's it. Although I really want to add some of those cranberries. So meanwhile, I will have already cooked the cranberries and the orange and the port wine. Although I need sugar for that. So that warm salad will get garnished with some of the... And I'm not going to let the cranberries really burst. I'm going to just barely cook them so that you'll have these like crazy tart, wonderful cranberries and a little bit of that poaching liquid with the oranges and the white wine can be part of the vinaigrette on that salad. And now apparently I need to make pasta. So I have durum wheat and eggs. And what else do I have? Wow, this is getting ugly. All right, so I'm going to make a little
told
pasta.
You it was tough.
I'm going to make a little, you know, I really just like fettuccine. So I'm going to roll it. And the kind of the fun thing about making that is I can roll it out with a rolling pin. I can cut it with my knife. I don't need to get any equipment out. And it's a labor of love. I'm just going to do it, you know? And so I'll make my fettuccine, let it dry. And then I have this whiskey and salami, and that's what's going to go on my pasta. So I'm going to cook the pasta. I'm going to julienne the salami. I'm going to put it in the pan with that whiskey and a little bit of butter. And I'm going to toss the and I have acorn squash. So actually I'm going to do a small dice of the acorn squash. I'll pop it in the pan as well. Toss it all with the pasta. That'll be pretty fun. The day-old bread, I'm going to make toast points with a day-old bread. And I'll reserve some of the salami and do a little bit of bruschetta on the side just to start people off so they have something to eat while I'm cooking. There we go. Thanks, Tony.
That is not remotely what I thought you were going to do.
Well, it's always nice to surprise you.
Oh, yeah. Like, wow. Salad. Swiss chard. Okay. All right. Capon. Sorry, that makes me think of Foghorn Leghorn when I see capon. stale bread, onion, celery, carrot, chicken stock, thyme, rosemary, bay leaf, peppercorn, kale and mustard greens, okay. Green beans, oysters in the shell, bailon, that's nice. Watercress, chorizo, oils and vinegars, parsnips, pecans, bacon. Well, job one, sort out the capon.
You're cooking at your dad's house.
Oh, electric range. Okay. capon, I'm going to break down into parts because, frankly, my dad loves fried chicken. So
good. That's nice.
So I'm going to make fried chicken, and I'm going to make a choice. I'm not going to serve both kale and mustard greens. That seems a little bit much. But wintertime, do I have some breadcrumb?
You have day-old bread.
Day-old bread, yeah. So I'm going to have to dry that in the oven a little bit and grind that up into a little bit of breadcrumb. I need something to coat that chicken with. So hoping that they have, I'm probably going to have to use what is likely 2% milk in the fridge and a little bit of melted butter that's clarified.
All right.
Mix that
good,
together
healthy
with,
people.
With the thyme and a little peppercorn and make a batter. And I know they have eggs in the fridge. So make a little batter for that chicken and get a big deep pan ready to fry it. Hoping I have oil out there. Peanut oil is nice. Canola if necessary, but peanut would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm going to break the capon into parts and fry that up. Chicken stock, I want to make soup. That's for sure. I need a little bit to wilt mustard greens down with. I think mustard greens is what I want. The parsnips, and I'm going to make into almost like a gratin with the bacon. Pecans, I'm going to eat them. Probably watching the football game with my dad, sorry. Let's see. Oysters in the shell. We're just going to eat the oysters in the shell with the beer we're going to have watching the football game before any of this other stuff happens.
Good.
Green beans, maybe a little light pickle on those guys. Serve them as a little garnish on the table. Watercress chorizo, that's an easy, snappy salad. So maybe with a little bit of carrot. You'd honestly just kind of even grate the carrot. So that is just kind of a fine, fresh relish on the plate. You have that and the pickled green beans as an accent. You have the nice mustard greens, hopefully with a little bit of spice to it. The soup, you know, maybe even just, I'm going to use the stock for a little bit for the gratin and a little bit cook the greens with. I'm going to save the rest of it. And rosemary, I don't think I have anything for it. Maybe make a rosemary mayonnaise or something for that fried chicken would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Have that around, but kind of all country food that I want to make with what you have here.
Yeah, why not?
So
sounds good.
Okay, so I guess that's that.
Okay. Well, I'm excited that we're going to talk about wine and booze.
Well,
to go for Thanksgiving.
Spirits. Yeah,
that should be
interesting.
To complete the show. So we'll talk about that next time.
Well, that's all we have time for on Foreman & Wolfe on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolfe.
You can download this program or any other podcast from the WYPR website, wypr.org. Just go to the Foreman & Wolfe page and select the episode that you'd like to hear. You can follow Chef Cindy Wolfe on social media.
On Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolfe, and on Instagram, Chef Wolfe. And Tony, I hear you have a Twitter account now.
A Twitter? No way. There is, however, Instagram, as shocking as that is. The real Tony Foreman.
Versus the fake one.
I think there's a faker out there. So the real Tony Foreman is the Instagram.
Good.
And you can correspond with the program via email, foremanofwolf@wypr.org. Thanks for listening.
And have a great Sunday.